Okay, 3, 2.
3, 2, hit it!
It's time to double down with Max and Stacy on Spooknet Radio. Now, coming up on the show, we talk to Charles Hugh Smith of TwoMinds.com about credit exhaustion and a precarious revolution. But first, as always, it's time to hear from Stacy with the hottest headlines of the day.
Oh, yes, Max. Today is Tuesday, which means that the Fed is meeting to determine whether or not to raise rates or lower rates or what they're going to do. Fed to hold fire on interest rates as world economy slows, says France 24. There's virtually no chance the U.S. Federal Reserve will raise interest rates in the coming weeks since policymakers have all but promised to hold their fire as the global economy slows. With inflation still tame as U.S. economic growth decelerates in 2019, economists also say Fed officials will once again lower the number of rate hikes they expect this year from the 2 projected in December.
Right. Well, there was a time when what the central banks did was important. That ended with the introduction of negative interest rates, which proves that we are in a post-central bank-led world. We're in a world of financial engineering by financial engineers to confiscate as much wealth as possible before somehow they're stopped. By some force or another, but it's not going to be a central bank. A central bank is pure window dressing. I just look at that number of negative interest-bearing government debt, which is now, last I checked, at $9.3 trillion and growing. That's the only real number. Whatever the central banks say, I mean, it's amusing for sure, but it is meaningless.
The benchmark interest rate is now in the range of 2.25 to 2.5%, and futures markets see no more rate rises in 2019, and investors now put the odds at 1 in 3 that the central bank will reverse direction and begin cutting rates in the next 10 months. Of course, Max, you have always said you can't taper a Ponzi, and they tried to taper a Ponzi scheme, and now it looks like they're going to have to basically start feeding the Ponzi again.
Well, did they try to taper the Ponzi scheme? Remember, the Fed was up slightly, but other central banks in the world were loosening. So there was no point. There was no period over the past 30 years during which there was an extended period of tightening. There was a lot of talk and a lot of dancing around, but there was never any tightening. There's never been any tightening. You can't tighten it. And so, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, of course, the EU, the European Central Bank, did not introduce quantitative easing until 2015, but they've been on quite an epic buying spree. And even China is now also suggesting that they may soon introduce QE. But to ordinary listeners out there, you might have been looking at property markets at all-time highs, way past their 2006 and 7 peak in cities all around the world. Stock markets are at all-time high, certainly in America, perhaps down in some other parts of the world over the past few years. So we're going to turn to Charles Hugh Smith of TwoMinds.com. And Charles, before we get to the precarious revolution, let's talk credit exhaustion. You've recently blogged about this. So what does credit exhaustion mean, and what are the signs of it, and are the Fed in a pickle right now?
Okay, well, great question. And credit exhaustion is when people who are qualified to borrow money don't want to borrow any more money, and people who are unqualified to borrow more money want to borrow more money, but lenders are wary because they, if they have any smarts at all, they realize those people will default at the first quiver in the economy. And so that would be a very poor risk to take. And so the point about credit exhaustion is the central banks can't force people to borrow more money. And as you guys just described, the financial engineering is based on people always borrowing more money and somehow having enough income to service that rising debt. And so I don't see how the central banks can get out of this pickle, frankly, because until they can have the legal right to force us to borrow money we don't want and don't need, or they're going to take over the lenders and just go ahead and make bad loans to people who really can't service any more debt, then the bubble is going to pop that way.
Right. Well, I mean, let's make a comparison here to the employment numbers in the U.S. You know, they don't count people that stop looking for jobs. And therefore, it looks like there are more people that are gainfully employed. So you're talking about credit exhaustion or what could be called a credit freeze. There hasn't been any credit generated, meaningful credit in 10 years now because we've been in the post-2008 zombie apocalypse of banks and corporations. And so what we see, for example, with Deutsche Bank is a zombie bank. It's insolvent, but the government's forcing a shotgun wedding with another bank to try to financially engineer their way to look like this is not actually a dead bank. So, we'll see more of this, right? One of my theories is that the entire global equity market's taken private, essentially, with all this cheap money. And instead of facing the music of the fact that they confiscated a lot of money, they're just going to take it all private and run away. Charles Hugh Smith.
Yeah, Max, I think that we're seeing that on multiple levels, right? We've already seen the Federal Reserve buy over $1 trillion worth of mortgages when the housing market got iffy in 2008, 2009. We hear stories from China of the local governments buying all the empty apartments that are going unsold to try to prop up prices there. We've heard about the Swiss National Bank buying Apple and so on. So yeah, I think you're absolutely right. That's the only course they can do to prop up these, as you say, obscenely unequal markets. And that's part of what I think my work has focused on, and you and I have discussed, you guys have discussed for the past decade, which is the benefits of this central bank Ponzi scheme have flowed to the top 5 or 10% max, right? The top 10% households own like 85% of the stocks. So the $30 trillion in gains in equities in the U.S. market over the past decade, $30 trillion has gone mostly to the very top tier. So we're leaving 95% of the population behind. And the central banks also have a problem there because politically, people are starting to wake up to the inequality that's been generated as a direct result of central bank policy.
Yes, that's the Cantillon effects. But let's combine those because you mentioned that, you know, the Fed can't force people to borrow. And what you mean by that is they're trying to force the bottom 95% to borrow because the top 5%, certainly the top 1%, have more than they possibly know what to do with. I was just reading some data and statistics on venture capital, and they have more money, like they're raising billions and billions. And they said that it's never been so easy for them to raise money. There's more than enough money at the top. But obviously, the pyramid nature of this our economy, our global debt economy, requires that the bottom 95 spend that money in order to basically prop up their bubbles in the assets and the investments that they're making. So the Fed is suggesting that they might go negative rates in the next downturn. Will that be able to, will the bottom 95% then be able to spend, or what happens when they go negative?
Well, that's a great question. And so far as if we look at Europe, where Max mentioned the $9 trillion in negative interest rates, I mean, that's Europe is in that state, and Japan is essentially there. And it hasn't really fixed what's broken with those economies. And so I'm not sure it's going to work in the U.S. What I think is really striking is the precariousness of life for the bottom 90% in America. And it's not just in America. I think the bottom 90% in China and South Korea and in many of nations in Europe, they're also precarious. And this was what drove the first American Revolution. You know, there's lots of stories about the Boston Tea Party and the repression of, you know, various taxes and all that stuff. All that played into it. But really what was happening was the colonists realized that their prosperity and freedom was becoming increasingly precarious as the British decided to milk the colonies for more. And how different is it now when our financial aristocracy is basically milking the bottom 90% and making their life extremely precarious?
Right. You know, the Yellow Vest movement in France is pretty clear what's going on there. They burn banks. They storm luxury restaurants. It's clear. I mean, so this is part of that global insurrection against banker occupation we've been talking about for a number of years. There are various hotspots around the world. I guess the question is, when these rebels eventually burn down these government buildings and whatnot, they'll want to bring in like socialism, as people in America are talking about, because they think that somehow is the go-to political system. And of course, that would be a big mistake too, Charles, right?
Right. And the reason why it would be a big mistake is it's not really socialism by the 19th century classic definition, which is ownership of the means of production by a government ruled by the people, right? So Medicare for all and free college for all and those kinds of programs which are being described as socialist, hey, the financial elites love it. They're already milking Medicare for tens of billions of dollars of profit. So double the cost of Medicare, the financial elite loves it. They're going to get trillions more to milk, right? And the same with higher education scam and national defense and all the other cartels. And so all these socialist programs, including universal basic income, are really just feeding the financial aristocracy. Because you can bet that UBI, the fundamental reason there is to keep the debt serfs able to service their debt. That's the whole point of UBI.
Well, you speak about that corruption. And I was just reading Matt Taibbi's piece in Rolling Stone magazine. And it pointed out that, you know, 54% of discretionary spending by the government goes to the Department of Defense, and it has never been audited. And so it was ordered to be audited over 30 years ago. And what they've done is every year they submit a notice from an audit firm, including PwC and Deloitte, and they pay these guys over $1 billion a year of taxpayer money to tell you that they're still working on it, that they haven't been able to untangle the whole mess. So anytime you try to involve all those lobbyists and all those connected contractors to the government, anytime you ask this government to help you out, it's just going to go, it's going to go to those contractors. In fact, they pointed out that there was so much fraud in the purchasing, so they hired a purchasing manager, and then the purchasing expenses doubled in 1 year. So it's like, I guess this is the precarious revolution. The bottom 99%, I think it's really the 99%, but they're being basically looted. And I can't see that ever with our surveillance capitalism now. How do we exit this? How do we leave this situation?
Well, that's a very big topic because, as we know, any kind of resistance like the Yellow Vests is crushed in America with overwhelming police brutality. And it's not that the French are really much behind us, right? I mean, they're attempting to suppress the Yellow Vests with police brutality as well. And so it's like, I wonder if we're not going to go down the path of the Roman Empire, when people were overtaxed and their freedoms and prosperity became extremely precarious, they just opted out. They just dropped out. In other words, you just go and you go live off the land. You give up your high-pressure corporate job. You just drop out. And that may be the only form of resistance that we're allowed now. Because, of course, we see increasing pressure like civil forfeiture. And if you're in the Pentagon national defense contractor world, if you whistleblow some of that corruption, you get stomped on, you know? So our freedoms are under tremendous pressure as well as our prosperity.
You speak of the Roman Empire. Of course, everybody remembers the coin clipping that happened, i.e. they basically confiscated your wealth. And this is one of the things that is being mentioned in all the mainstream financial press by, you know, which is targeting the top 1%. And they're saying the problem is there's no inflation, but that's perhaps because they never interact with the bottom 99%. As we mentioned, student loans, auto loans, everything is so up in price. Like, how can the bottom 99% take any more inflation?
Right. I mean, the statistics, even the official statistics, as bogus as they are showing rents have increased by 40 to 50% in the past decade. And supposedly, everyone's wages have risen by 23%. Well, there's still a pretty big gap between 20% and 40%. I mean, people are losing ground.
Right. Dropping out, returning to the land, becoming self-sufficient, maybe moving to Hawaii and becoming a macadamia farmer like Charles Hugh Smith, possibly as a macadamia farmer. I'm not sure. But that's it for this episode of Double Down with me, Max Keiser, and Stacey Herbert on Sputnik Radio. I'd like to thank our guest, Charles Hugh Smith of Of2Minds.com. Until next week, bye, y'all.